Hello, welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. If you are like most, you are here because you want to gain insights on how to best scale a business. To achieve optimum scaling, many metrics are important. Sales, leads, cost of customer acquisition, gross revenues. However, as you know, no statistic is as important as profits, both net and gross. For over a decade, your host, Richard Doherty, has helped his clients increase their profits, often turning them into profit-rich winners. To help listeners like you achieve stellar profits in business, Richard has written an ebook entitled Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It includes profit-making advice from Richard, as well as some of the top guests he's had on the podcast. Just for listening, it is yours free. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. Now, over to the show with Richard Doherty, founder and host.
Hello, I'm Richard Doherty, founder and CEO of Scale Up Consulting and author of Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. And I believe that a secret sauce to unlocking growth in your business is working with and tapping into an inclusive and accessible set of advisors and consultants. And no better people to talk about this than Roger and Mitch. They are both managing partners at Founder Advisors out in the US and, you know, have had absolutely stellar careers, both in the startup world and corporate space. So super excited, gents, to welcome you on the show today and dive into a topic that, in all honesty, I think needs a bit of airtime. So welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you so much, Richard. Yeah, thanks for having us.
So, as everyone knows, folks, I always like to give a bit of a synopsis, a lay of the land as we jump into to the show. So everyone's out there, all my fintech friends, you're out there, and you know that many forces are putting their imprints on the fintech and banking industry today. From innovative financial tech companies to changes in global economic clout, and also, you know, changes in social and demographic transformation. Customers. Trust is not what it used to be. The obstacles of fintechs getting out there and growing have actually lowered. And, you know, we realize in this in recent years, because if you look at the stats, adoption has gone from something in the region of 31% back in 2016, 2017 to recent findings of 60% of global audiences are starting to adopt fintechs in some way, shape, or form. And I don't know about you, but I think that's pretty impressive, right? And today, ultimately, the fintech industry is not what it was back in 2008 when there was a surge of technology advances. It has matured, right? And you know, right now, there are stable companies with a full range of services and offerings out there. There are companies that have IPO'd. And consequently, you as a founder, as a CEO, as a CTO, and as a leader of a fintech company, you're probably finding yourself faced with certain challenges, right? Certain challenges around business strategy. You're asking yourself, how do you set up your organization to scale efficiently? How do you make certain your audience is engaged with your mission, with your product, with your services? How do you get new products out there? How do you develop those new products? And which customers are you targeting? What about data security? Yes, I said it, data security. You have to figure it out and you have to be all in on data security. And also, I'm afraid to say, compliance and regulatory compliance is also a number one priority. And integrating into all the technologies out there is top of the list as well. There's a lot of challenges facing startup founders in the fintech ecosystem. But here's the thing, right? If you're able to leverage another ecosystem of advisors, of people of value that allows you to navigate your Everest, you will be able to connect the dots with these folk, right? And you'll be able to grow. So enough of me talking, you're thinking, Richard, enough jabbering, let's get on with it. So let's get on with it. Let's bring the guys into it. And maybe Mitch, I'm going to bring you into the first question here and open it up. And I'd like to get your opinion as to why you think it's vital to have access to an ecosystem of people or advisors that bring more value into your business rather than the simple and the old, not, I don't want to say the old school, the old ways of black book organizations. So what do you think is that value?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think good advisory is way more than just technical expertise and know-how. So you need to model behavior, teach, inspire right action, you know, try to encourage alignment, which is a big thing that we do at Founder Advisors. But on the ecosystem side, I think that's very important because a lot of founders and or early enterprises somewhat by definition have a guarded mindset because they don't want to reveal what they know or why they're different, et cetera. But good ideas and meaningful relations can come from anywhere and anybody. So the more you're engaging with outside parties and trying to figure out where the ecosystem, there's a lot of the ecosystem that's very friendly and willing to do things and share things without expectations, which is kind of what we do, which is tough because we're donating a lot of our time, et cetera, but it pays back. It pays back not having the expectations. And so one of the things I will say for the founders is to sort of, as a mindset shift, is to accept and believe in an abundance that it's okay to go and get out there and really try to develop your ecosystem without these expectations, knowing that yes, people want to get paid and they have their own metrics they need to hit, et cetera, but you can navigate. And if you just stay hidden most of the time, you'll probably miss out on some great, great opportunities that people just wanted to, who want to be helpful. And the ecosystems that I like or I see have been very helpful. I mean, I started in the Bay Area in the startup ecosystem early 2000s. And the ones that I found were more fruitful were the ones that support the both the joys and the setbacks that, you know, founders are going to go through. And the journey is tough, but you want folks there that can help you celebrate both of those setbacks and joys.
I like that. And it rings a bell in a good bell in my head. And it's one that I think it's around connecting the dots. You have an ecosystem, you work with advisors, consultants in that ecosystem, people in that ecosystem that can connect the dots with you. It allows you to then sort of potentially propel to a new level without being frustrated. I mean, I remember a few weeks ago, one of the guys came into my fintech think tank and he was struggling raising money for his crypto business. And within an hour session, with 9 founders around the table, all of a sudden he had like 10 investors to go and talk to, right? And I think the power of the ecosystem, the power of the network is something that must be valued and must be part of this, the value that advisors and consultants bring to it. And also being able to, you know, connect the dots. Roger, I know you've done this throughout your career at Gartner and obviously now. What's your take on this?
Yeah, I mean, what really struck me in your opening is the three words, ecosystem of advisors. And interestingly, even though we're in fact doing that, and that's kind of who we are, we're creating, we call it an advisory team as a service to try to use that as a service mindset. But I think I like ecosystem of advisors even better. I mean, I feel like I want to adopt that now as the new way to describe what we do.
That's right. High fives.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're going to get lots of high fives on that because you nailed it there and you frame that. And then Mitch, I think really hit some of the key points that we want to reinforce, which is this, what I sometimes call the attitude of scarcity versus an attitude of abundance. And I think that that is true of the whole industry, not just fintech entrepreneurship, but entrepreneurship and investing in general, historically from, you know, the early 70s of Silicon Valley when this got started, it's really been about excluding the losers and, you know, sort of finding the gems. But the reality is none of the gems come out of the ground fully polished and cut, right? It's an ongoing process. And to some of the points you and Mitch were making, you know, it takes a bit of a village, right? To use that metaphor to do that. And if you make your village small, because you're afraid, because you're scared, you know, fear-based mindset, which is scarcity mindset, then you're going to create what you think, right? So if you think with abundant mindset, if you think, hey, I need more advice, I need more advisory. And obviously it needs to be structured in a way as an entrepreneur to not take too much of your time. And one of the reasons why we have an ongoing weekly engagement, at least weekly engagement with the folks that are with us, our startups, is because then our lead advisors who are assigned are always up to speed on what's happening with that startup. Things move so fast in the startup, right? And that's what we're trying to do is, you know, sort of slow down the cognitive craziness of 147 plates spinning on top of poles that you have to keep going every single day. And it's like, oh my God, that one crashed and hit the ground. Having an always on service like this, that the entrepreneur feels like, hey, these people are included in our team. And that's how we position ourselves. We consider ourselves a fractional accessory. A fractional team is a service, not just fractional CTO or fractional CFO, right? But really trying to be comprehensive so that you always know, you go to your concierge lead advisor and say, all right, I've got a problem. And it could even be personal coaching, like, hey, my spouse is upset with me because I'm spending too many hours on the weekend, right? We've been through all those things. And I think that if you include into your experience as an entrepreneur, the opportunity for other people to come in and show you things with their fresh eyes, then you're going to move faster. You're going to raise more money. You're going to deliver better products. You're going to get to market faster. You're going to get to that exit faster. And that's why inclusivity and an inclusive abundance mindset, to Mitch's point, is so important.
I like this because here we are, we're talking about, you know, tech, you know, fintech, but also I know you guys, you're broader than fintech. But a lot of times when I'm talking to clients, prospects, also in the community, it's very focused on one thing. It's focused, or maybe on two things, but one thing sort of trumps it. It's either the product or the customer, right? And okay, we want to make the best product. We want to get out there and make certain our customers are happy with their product. But what we're saying here, we're saying, you know, think broader than that. We're saying there's an ecosystem, a community that you can also leverage or even create alongside this that, you know, will allow you to, you know, maybe get some know-how, but also impinge on or jump over obstacles that you face much easier, much quicker than if you were to go it alone and just go, okay, product is product, 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 or customer, customer, customer. Think about marketing, think about sales, think about operation, think about all these things in your business that you have to tackle and look at different ecosystems that you can leverage in order to tackle these head on rather than be on that treadmill struggling through certain parts of growth. I mean, Mitch, is that what we're talking about here?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's value in being very focused and just without seeking even the ecosystem to test and or validate your hypothesis. So don't wait for things to take action because you want to learn, because then you have context to ask and or try something different. But if you're always just in your own silo or just doing things just from your organization out, you can miss out on some great opportunities. And then the corollary, the opposite is also true. If you're just always doing stuff sort of in collaboration, et cetera, those folks are not on your timetable generally. So yeah, there's generally sort of a trade-off where you sort of evaluate things and try to test things out. At least I've seen that at work, where you're kind of balancing both those things. Certain things you have to have, if you want it the way you want it, you have to have focus. You have to take ownership of it all as much as you can, but you don't want to miss out on those other opportunities that sometimes take longer because anytime you do anything outside your organization or with other entities, even if there is alignment, you have to first of all, find alignment and seek alignment and then try to measure it and try to encourage it. You have to do as much of the encouraging as you can. And that's a great skill set to have as a small organization because you have to kind of punch outside your weight class. And oftentimes you have to leverage it's all as much as you can, leverage your own know-how, other people's know-how, exactly, et cetera, and do it in a graceful and I would say entertaining or fun way so that people want to work with you.
And it can be very successful. Yeah, and here's the thing. I hear what you're saying about having focus on product because it is important to have focus on product, get the best product. But so is it important to have a good team, right? A lot of times I hear, you know, there's this war on talent. And then I ask people, okay, why are you finding it difficult to find talent? Well, you know, we just raised X amount of money. We haven't really done much beforehand, but now the product's ready. Let's go. But, you know, surely we should be looking at that slightly different. We should be going, let's build this ecosystem, community, whatever we want to call it. And it involves making certain that we are hooked into people that we're having conversations with over a period of time. It could be talents and people that want to join us. It could be partners that want to join us. It could be investors. It could be, you know, various amounts, you know, different types and different forms of people. But if you always wait for your product to go, then you're sort of on the back foot, right, Roger, on the other things.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, your words are exciting to me because, you know, to Mitch's point, you know, and it's important to have product, but, you know, engineers like myself, I'm an electrical engineer, Mitch is a mechanical engineer. And you know, I always say, you can't spell geek without a double E. And so we technical people in fintech or any tech startup, right? We tend to default to the things like human beings do, to the things that we're comfortable with, we enjoy. But what we're talking about here within the ecosystem and including more and more people into what's happening with your startup, first of all, as Mitch kind of pointed out, you know, sometimes it's like, oh, it's a secret and we can't tell anybody because we're afraid of competition. And I always tell founders, never be afraid of competition, right? Yeah. And you should talk about what you're doing. Great. And not worry about the competition, because you're going to learn more and it's going to be more competitive if you are open and transparent than if you are closed. But, you know, to go back to this point of connection, you know, it all starts with connection. And if you're an early stage startup, which a lot of our founders are, they're either in concept self-funded or they've got some seed funding, friends and family, or they've got Super Angel and they're in pre-series. A lot of the times they're pre-series A, but have raised several million dollars or raising series A is... they hit, you know, it's like, hurry up and wait. And then the money comes in and it's like, oh my goodness, I got to go get talent, right? And then you put that job ad out there and it's almost like starting from a standing start.
Yeah,
you need to be preparing to grow, right? And I call it, you know, preparing to connect. Yeah. So if you start to create that ecosystem of people that are aware of what you're doing, right? It includes general marketing into your, you know, social media. I mean, you don't have a lot of money to do marketing early on because it's expensive. And so you've got to kind of self-market. You've got to use the connections that you've already got and also start thinking a little bit around the corner. And that's what we really help our founders do. It's so, you know, I talked about the 147 plates on poles that are spinning, right? It's really hard to look down the field when those plates are falling off and crashing to the floor, right? And the cognitive load of stressing, am I going to meet payroll? Am I going to be able to pay these bills? Am I, you know, is my Amazon Web Services going to get turned off, right? And those are the kind of things that we help them kind of level up out of the grunge. And, you know, we still need to do that. And we still need to delegate to people on our team. But looking around the corner, preparing for that next connection point, right? That looking ahead, looking down the field. This metaphor exists in all sorts of human endeavors for a reason. You have to balance between the polarity of what's on fire right now and what's going to be on fire if we don't pay attention to it over the next couple of weeks. And that's what we try to do, is we take our founders from sort of a five-year vision out of where are you in 5 years? What are you personally doing? Yeah. How big is your team? What impacts are you making on the market? We walk them back 3 years from now. Where do you have to be 3 years from now to be at that five-year mark? And then back to 1 year. And all of a sudden, this Mitch has been using the word alignment. This creates an alignment among the founding team and the core team. What we find almost every single time is when we run people through this exercise, initially they think, oh, we don't do that. We're a big company, you know, fail fast, lean startup and all that, which is all valuable. But I always say, you know, if you don't know where you're going, any old direction will get you there and you'll try to go in every direction. And that's a resource hog. So preparing, bringing in outside people all across the board, that's what we teach folks to do, is to how to manage that. And it's really hard, especially for the initial tech founding team, because a lot of times hand on keyboard or hands on hardware, right? And so it's like, how do I begin to level up? And that's where having external advisors that are continuously engaged is going to help you do that. Where boards of advisors are great. I tend to call them the board of influencers, because they tend to be big names in your industry that are going to make that huge introduction when the time is right. And that's super valuable. But they may not have the time to advise you. So.
And I like what you're saying. I mean, I always, you know, when I'm talking to my clients, I say the world has shifted. It's no longer the information age. It's the age of connectiveness. You need to go out there and use the digital means that we have to connect with people, right? LinkedIn, Facebook, whatever digital platform you want to use. But you need to go out there and connect. But more than that, you can't just go and connect. You need to do something else. And what is that something else? You need to create. You need to create stuff. And it's, we're creating products, but you're also creating other things so that people want to come and talk to you. Maybe it's a podcast, as an example, or maybe it's some really great content that you can share on LinkedIn that people want to come talking to you, i.e. people, i.e. it might be customers, but also might be future employees, right? So, and there's not, I don't feel that there's investment in time and money in that, but also you can do this by yourself as a founder. You just have to get the know-how, right? You have to be able to jump in, want to learn about it, and realize that this is part and parcel of actually building a business, sort of the PR, marketing and sales side of things, the business development side of things. You need to jump in, connect, create, and then move people through the different cycles of your ecosystem. And as part of this, I mean, what do you, I think when you're looking at advisors, Mitch, I mean, as a personality trait, I guess certain people work for certain situations, right? And I mentioned the black book earlier on, which I think is important, but also I think is a bit of a, in a way, is quite an interesting one. Maybe it's more important in enterprise sales. But what should you be looking at if you're going out and we're talking to, well, some of the listeners are thinking, yeah, I need to get an advisor on board. I don't want to say what are the attributes, what are the personality traits of that person or that company that the folks out there should be looking at?
Well, I found the ones that I tend to gravitate earlier in my career, the ones that just model great behavior, like, oh, I want to be like that. Whatever it is they said, generally it's because I find that they're less interested in showing off what they know. And they really try to encourage and support your self-mastery and discovery and just be like, you're going to have to figure it out yourself because I can't be there with you anyway. So yes, give you some technical know-how, expertise.
But also that tough love is, I think, what you're talking about, right?
Which it can be, it can be tough. Yeah, exactly. It can be tough love as well as sometimes it's just encouragement. Or in my case, as I learned, I have a lot of impatience. And so if you're a founder, you don't have and you're not slightly impatient, you don't have the hustle, I'm like, oh, you're not going to make it. Because I've seen too many of that. Oh, we're super no in the know-how. Look at all our pedigree. Look at just on paper, it looks great. I'm just like, then I walk and go meet someone else who's like, I know they don't know very, very much, but I can already just tell, oh my God, this person's going to figure it out. Come hell or high water or whatever tricks you want. It's like, interesting. And I've seen that over my career with different founders, because I've had so many coffee meetings or other types of meetings. Or even I first learned it with filmmakers, because that's when I realized, like, oh my God, you don't even, whatever it takes, you're going to make this film because you were passionate. And that's when I also realized the other thing that I look for: purpose trumps passion. Passion is a good place to start because you're very motivated. But if you find purpose, you'll do stuff that you don't want to do that has nothing to do with passion. Those are the people that I really like to find. So encouraging that, and then looking at a founder like, hey, is this really what you want to be doing? But hey, I see you have a lot of purpose over here. Maybe you need to find that in your business. Anyway, so character traits, I see people who are really good at it, who have kind of been there, done that, because they also, when I was younger, generally folks who had just had a lot more experience. And then also I would say generosity and authenticity. And the authenticity could be like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, you're going to have to figure it out or whatever it is. But authenticity is it. So generosity, authenticity, model behavior, those that encourage and support self-mastery and discovery. I mean, like I said, those that are there to support you in your joys and your setbacks, I think are what I tend to look for. So those are just good people to be around. You just want to be there because you can show off but you can be your full self, good, bad, and different. Doesn't matter. You can show up as you are, which is what you need to show up as a founder for your team in some cases, like just be super authentic.
I love what you're saying there. And I mean, in my experience, it's also important to make certain the founders or the executive team that you're working with want to take action, right? They don't want to rest on their laurels. They want to be pushed outside of their comfort zone, because that's where sort of growth happens. That's where scaling happens. And Roger, in your experience, how do you make certain that the leaders that you advise in are willing to take action or wanting to get to that outcome, that 5-year outcome, that 3-year outcome, that 12-month outcome, and they'll do anything that's required? Because you want people in your world that actually want results rather than the other side of things, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's some key things that we look for. And Mitch was talking about, the key one, which is purpose-driven. And I think that that goes both ways. To kind of go back to your original question of what makes a good advisor, authenticity, to Mitch's point, and then also for us, purpose-driven. So we are purpose-driven. We are basically selecting for companies where we, when we ask the question, you know, what's your revolution? Which we got from a friend of ours at Camelback Ventures, Charles Corpru, came up with that question. He just wanted, you know, that's his first question to an entrepreneur. What's your revolution? And it's kind of provocative. It's kind of pithy and punchy, which is the three P's of what we were taught at Gartner on how to write a research note. And what it does is if that founder lights up because they are a revolutionary and they have a purpose around that revolution, that's the founder that I'm looking for. And I think vice versa. I think that if you're a founder and you're looking for good advisors, number one, you know, they need to not be like, hey, I'm here to show off my bona fides and who I'm connected to. And I've got, you know, I'm worth millions and millions of dollars or things like that. It's authenticity, groundedness, and wanting to connect with you. Like when you have that conversation with that advisor, if they feel like, wow, this person gets me, that's that gut feeling. Because entrepreneurship is all about emotion. Right. And so is investing. And I tell every founder, even the private equity folks who are dropping in $100 million in places, they're human beings too. And ultimately, the initial reason that got them going towards that $100 million investment is emotional. It's psychological. It's human. Right. So look for people who connect with you on a human level. And some of the things that will be signs is they're not talking about themselves. They're asking you about you. What's your purpose? What's your story been like in your journey? Wow, I bet this has been hard on your family, right? When you hear an advisor connecting with you like that, that's a person you can trust, right? A person you could take into a, you know, the old bar fight, right? And know that they've got your back. And then the other thing too is I mentioned the word encouragement, which I always like to say, you know, the word encouragement, everybody knows what it means, but I say it's to put courage into someone else, right? And so one of the things that we do is we start with compliments for our founders on every engagement we have, from the very first one to every single check-in that they have. Hey, let's review what's gone well, right? As opposed to the, you know, sort of the scarcity mindset of, okay, we got to put, which fire do we have to put out today? Well, let's celebrate success first. And so if you find advisors that come in with that positive attitude and then start with compliments and move to concerns, not criticisms, not attitude, that's an advisor that's going to help you. So it's all about the human connection. You know, to go back to your point, you're creating connections here. Exactly. And so create good ones.
Yeah, I like it. And as an advisor, I mean, how do you assess the validity of someone to actually take action? Because it's, I know we're coming up with purpose. We're coming up with people that are creating and breaking new grounds. But you know, these folk that are coming into your world, they also need to be action. They need to be action oriented. They need to be able to execute on what advice is given, but also on the strategy that's laid out.
Want to increase the profits in your business? Download Richard's ebook right now, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It will help you find new ways to increase your profits. Best of all, it's free. Go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.
What's the personality traits of that type of person that you look for? I know we've mentioned the advisor side of things, but what about on the founder side?
Yeah, the founder, obviously, the fact that they've gotten to a point where they've raised enough money to be with us and pay us the monthly fee and decide that that's worth paying that fee for advisory like this. Yeah. That's one sorting mechanism, is they see the big picture. And then the other thing that we do structurally to try to shore people up, even if they're not that, we're all on a spectrum of proactivity in terms of following through. And all of us vary around that. So what we try to do with this continuous check-in is that sometimes I call the lead advisor the accountability buddy, right? What did you accomplish last week? Yeah. You know, that we talked about that you were going to accomplish. Did you get those things done? Great. Let's celebrate those. Oh, we didn't quite get that done for these reasons. Okay, let's talk about that. And then by the end of the meeting, what are you committing to me as your advisor to get done by next week? And also let's talk about what's really important. And this is just this continuous weekly coaching advisory is just not typical. And people are like, I'm too busy for that. I know what I'm doing. Just give me money and get out of my way, right? Those are signs that I really don't want to work with a startup founder.
Yeah, I hear you. So, Mitch, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, from the founder's perspective, I mean, I think they need to be able to define outcomes and take action steps. Like, you have to be a doer in some fashion. Sure enough, otherwise you have to surround yourself with those folks and be self-aware
or
enough.
Hire some doers. If you're a visionary, yeah, hire some doers.
But you can. And I do think that the better founders also know their strengths and weaknesses, and they build around that and their other team. So they're just like, all right, I need to give them, they're super smart, visionary, et cetera. And they motivate the team. But like, so you have to shore up or find people who can shore up your strengths and weaknesses. So people, the personality traits that are self-aware to know where their strengths and weaknesses are, or their and or collectively their team and or ecosystem, and figure out ways to shore that up. And then ones I think that actually do find ways of holding themselves accountable. Some people are just naturally wired that way, maybe because they were an athlete or something. They develop it inherently, who knows, or personality trait. If you don't have it, then you should seek outside or in your team or better third parties that's not your teams, like advisors. In terms of other personality traits, I do think some level of, as we were talking a little bit about, you have to have some level of courage and a doer mindset as well as humility, because you're not going to have all the answers. Sometimes you're seen as the one that have to have the answers, but sometimes you have to go with your gut in some fashions. But at the end of the day, I do find, and that is something that, as I was mentioning, something that rubs me the wrong way, because I've been at this for quite some time, is you do have to have some hustle in your step, especially early on, because things aren't going to fall naturally into your plate. And so you're going to have to overcome adversity and just know the good is going to come and the bad is going to come and know it and be ready for it, because it's going to be a little bit of a waves of good things, bad things, and just be tempered for it. And so those kind of personalities, some level of resilience that you need to develop and or learn as you go, what resiliency you need to have. I guess so. Personality trait, self-awareness would be a high level one that I would look for.
Yeah,
think about.
I really resonate with that too. And Mitch and I are very aligned with that. You know, it reminds me of the famous quote outside the cave for the oracle at Delphi in ancient Greece, which was, know thyself. It's 100%. Fundamentally, and that's one of the things that I think we try to test. You know, Mitch talked about this courage and humility. And I say, you know, this is a polarity to the balance. It's not a choice to be made. Or, you know, there's an abundance of courage and abundance of humility. You can maximize both. You don't have to trade them off. So build them both up. But it starts with knowing yourself. And sometimes what I do with prospects that we're considering bringing on, in some cases investing in, is I ask them two questions. You know, what is your unique brilliance? Mm. Right. And then, you know, I listen. I don't even define what I really mean by unique brilliance. Mm. I listen to what they say. And then I say, and they get excited. And usually they like that because it's self-complimenting. It's like, yeah. I'm like, oh yeah, I can see that in you. And then I ask them, what do you suck at? Right. And this is the character test. This is the willingness to be vulnerable. And also, to put Mitch's point, self-aware. And when I see a courageous, self-aware person, and sometimes they're self-aware, it's like, look, I'm not a doer. I'm a visionary. I'm the one that does these things. But I've hired people to come in and fill that hole because I'm self-aware that I'm not a doer. I've hired some hustlers, you know, and vice versa. They're a doer and they realize, hey, you know, I feel like I can only see so far down the field here. I see what our first product could be and what the market is, but I really don't have a sense of what, you know, and then it's like, okay, you need to bring a visionary partner in to complement yourself. So, you know, this balance across your team, if you're a founder, you got to look at every single person. Don't look at just what they're doing. Look at how they do it and how they approach it and start to think, is this blend of personalities in my company and the connections between those teams, the pipe, my wife is an executive coach and sometimes she calls it the pipe works, right? Are the pipes between all the people in my team, are they red, meaning there's problems and frictions? Is it green? Obviously good. Things look great in both directions. Or is it blue? It's underdeveloped. These people are not working together enough. Those are the three things as a leader you have to have your mind on, not just the state of product market fit and the state of the relationship and how many people are soft circled to put money into your round. Your company is the connections between the people in the company, including yourself, and those connections to advisors and supporters outside. So that's the ecosystem. Your ecosystem of your company is an entity, and you're growing that up to be more and more conscious, you know, almost like a conscious entity. So you're responsible for those neuronal connections between people and between advisors, investors, customers, partners. Yeah. So that's how the mind, I'm looking for that mindset of seeing the big picture, but also knowing themselves and knowing what they need to fill in. When you see that, now that's the kind of leadership that's going to make things happen.
Yeah, I love it. And as we wrap up this section of the podcast and we head into the flash round, which is a bit of fun at the end, what are a couple of tips that you can give up to the startup founders out there that are looking to get engaged in different types of ecosystems, maybe start an ecosystem themselves or a community themselves that they can leverage to scale up themselves and also their business? Maybe Mitch go first and then Roger go second.
I was thinking of something Roger was probably going to say, so I'll steal his first.
Go for it. We're aligned. We're a hive mind. Sometimes we call ourselves a hive mind.
One of the ecosystem things you could do is build a customer advisory board. Some people don't do that early often, but those are your customers. Figure out which ones you can lean in a little bit more with and or be vulnerable, ask for feedback, and they have the time to do it and willingness to do it. So that's one thing, because they're immediate to your, especially if you're very product focused and very internal, then fine. They're your customers. It's not a bad use of time, regardless, because there's always insights there. And then I do like the idea of not having too high of expectations, but trying to test, plant seeds, and then pollinate the ones that work well, especially like outside of your organization. But you have to be doing it. So that sometimes it's around conferences, sometimes that's around things that you see that are value driven, that part of where the ecosystem sort of shares the same value, even if someone else's ecosystem, because you can just learn from it and you're sort of giving your perspective, but engaging in external conversations that are either directly related to your customer base or directly related to what's going to support your team in some fashion. Yeah. So that's, professional groups, et cetera. And because there's just a lot of sharing. And if you're just like, no, you just got to focus on your stuff. Like, well, where am I going to get the ideas? Where am I going to make encouragement? Where you can't listen to me and you're not even a product. Let's say they're not a product. Your founder's not a product. Like, you can't help me out. So I got to get my encouragement somewhere else. So it's not just about customer centric, but it's around other professionals who get your team members. And he's like, hey, whatever it takes to get you guys going. And then sometimes that cross pollination. And guess what? That's where you find employees, people to join your team. Like, well, I got someone, I just met them and especially as you grow, because you're out there, not just super focused in on your team. Anyways, so that's fine.
Love it. Roger, can you top that?
Well, I want to build on what Mitch said there, how important it is. And one of the biggest things it wasn't just startups that when I was working at Gartner that I was telling to do customer advisory boards. It was big companies too. And in many cases, the bigger tech companies are terrible at it as well, because especially success breeds, sort of an internal mindset. Hey, we're obviously smarter than everyone else. So we're just going to dictate to the market what the product should look like. And you lose that customer centricity. And so I think one of the things, especially for startups, that is a bit of a tweak on customer advisory board is, think of this. You don't have any customers yet, or you only have one or two, but you have a bunch of prospects. Yeah. Ask all of them to be on your customer advisory board and they'll go, well, I'm not a customer yet. It's like, yeah, but we want you to be. So we want you to give input so that someday we can bring you on as a customer. And that's a compliment to them. We trust you and believe in you, even though you're not paying us. Would you be on my customer advisory board? You can call it a prospect advisory board, but if you use the word customer, but then invite prospects, what you're going to get is they're going to start thinking of themselves as a customer. And the next thing this is a technique that comes out of Robert Cialdini's book, Persuasion. He wrote a book about the art of persuasion, but he also wrote this book that I recommend to all startup founders called Persuasion, Robert Cialdini. Yeah. And he said, it's preparing to persuade, right? So that's why what Mitch is recommending there, and especially the nuance of boldly ask prospects who've said no to you, but maybe later, because everybody says that. A lot of your first prospects, well, we're interested in what you're doing, but it's not quite there yet. Get back to us, right? It's like, okay, but would you be willing to be part of my customer advisory board? And you'd be surprised how often they say yes, because it doesn't cost them anything. It went from, oh, I'm going to have to give the startup money to, oh, they're going to listen to me and make me feel like I know what I'm talking about. So I wanted to start with that. And then the other tip I would say is to go back to what I said about these pipe works. I would right now, as you're listening to what I'm saying here, startup founder, get a PowerPoint or a big sheet of paper, draw yourself in the middle, and then draw everyone around you that's key on your team, some key investors, advisors, whoever, everybody who is really already part of your ecosystem, and draw a line to that person and ask yourself, is my pipe works with this person green? Awesome. Is it red? Ooh, problematic. Is it blue? Hey, I need to develop this. Or is it gray, which is just, it's not there yet. I haven't met this person. What you're building is you're building a two-dimensional, and in some sense, you could think of it as a three-dimensional, four-dimensional over time, map of the ecosystem that you are building up. And when the ecosystem becomes healthy, your company will be successful. When the people who are attached in any way, shape, or form to your startup have lots of green pipes, not just with you, but think about the pipes between your employees, like I talked about. This pipeworks exercise is the simplest thing to do in the world. You could probably do it now with no further instruction. Go do this. Love it. And then every week or every month or every quarter, whatever is appropriate, go back and revisit those and say, hey, has this pipe gone from green to red or green to blue or blue to green? You know, how is this, how am I doing? So that's my advice to, you know, actionable thing for you to do.
Yeah, awesome. Awesome. Some really, really great advice, guys. And now we're into the fun part of the show. It's a bit of a drum roll.
Liverpool.
Exactly. Champions League final, my friend. There we go. So here we go. So the flash round. What is the flash round? I ask the guys three questions. I'll go ask one, two, and another one. And then I turn the mic over. And between you could ask me one question. Let's see how that works. Don't both fight over who's going to ask it. I'll let you maybe same time each other or WhatsApp. If you're like, I'll ask Richard. There we go. I can see them working away already. So here we go. I am going to ask you first one. Is ecosystem first or product first? Roger.
I think you have to have product concept first, but immediately afterwards, then you have to draw a picture of the ecosystem that will develop around that, right? So it's a back and forth. You know, this is the iterative, you know, agile, lean startup approach, but you have to start from not from the product market fit iterations and concept ecosystem fit, because there's an ecosystem out there that's going to love your product in 5 years if you're successful.
Yeah, love it. Mitch, vision or execution?
This is a great one. I often use the term having seen amazing teams on paper and then potentially raise a ton of money and then implode spectacularly. I'm no longer enamored by big visions, big ideas, especially if you see a lot of pitches. Yeah. You do need it. There's a value for it. But I've quickly, always in the back of my mind, the first thing I say to myself is like, in the land of ideas, those who can execute rule. Because that's what I've seen. Because I've seen like, oh, wow, I would have never thought that was going to go anywhere. Boom. They went off running and didn't have a great vision. Yeah. So I try to temper that every time I see a good vision. I'm always thinking that. I lean towards execution just because I've seen a lot of vision go nowhere. And I've just been around people who are just all my life, especially if you hang around in the entrepreneurial phase or even the creative phase, just creative ideas, big visions, and I just see it, just they don't go anywhere. So I lean more towards execution and then shore you up with vision, but great vision, and then you can execute your bonus. But I do like, because I meet a lot of founders, et cetera, and oftentimes I feel like, wow, you guys think it's kind of easy and it's just going to show up. I'm like, so I lean more on execution and then love it when they're like, oh my God, and you have a spectacular vision. Which is also, by the way, we do that as one of our foundational steps. We do a vision, mission value, super lightweight. Cause it's like, oh my God, you're missing out. You need to put some of that in here. This is going to attract employee. Like, so we lean into it. Anyway, that's my answer.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, and just to add on that real quick, it's a polarity to manage. It's not an either or, it's an and, right? Yeah. But I also will quote another very famous person, the polymath of history, Da Vinci, who said, simplicity is the ultimate sophistication. So if you're executing on a focused, simple thing that you know what the outcome is, and your vision, make sure it's a simple vision, because part of the reason that entrepreneurs fail is they think that complexity is what is attractive to the human race. It's not complexity. We're sick of complexity, right? We've overwhelmed ourselves with complexity. And in the land of entrepreneurship, to use a little bit of Mitch's metaphor, I think the simplest ideas win, and those are the best, not the most complex, not the most complicated.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with both of you. That's all I can say. Okay. Roger, last one for you. Relationships, every day, building those, spending time on it, or getting on the phone and cold calling.
I think, you know, this is a bit of a polarity. You can overdo either one.
Yeah,
right. I know. That's right. I'll go back to
the flash run again. Either or.
But I lean towards relationships, right? Relationship building is the way you get more than the sum of the parts. I always say, you know, it takes two men can dig a hole four times faster than one, right? There's a nonlinearity in there. So, and it's the relationships that maximize the outcomes because people step in, people catch, you know, the things that you drop if you have those relationships. And there's an acronym I want to share with everyone that's in my wife's book called The Art of Alignment, A Practical Guide to Inclusive Leadership, to come back to our inclusive word. And that acronym is SHUVA, S-H-U-V-A. And it stands to be seen, heard, understood, valued, and appreciated. Okay, so this is sort of like a business form of, you could call it love, but every human being wants SHUVA. I want to be seen, heard, understood, valued, and appreciated. And so do you, right? So how do you create that? You give first, right? Which is a friend of mine, Brad Feld, here at Foundry Group in Boulder, came out with the hashtag give first like about 10 years ago. And it's a powerful thing.
Yeah.
If you give SHUVA first, if you see, hear, understand, value, and appreciate your team members, your co-founders, your investors, you know, your prospects, your customers, they're going to feel that. And that's going to create a self-sustaining energy around your company. It's going to attract employees. It's going to attract investors. You, as the founder, usually the CEO, you are the chief SHUVA officer, right? And if you lay that down everywhere with everyone, you're going to be blown away by how much gets done and how many problems get solved without you even knowing about it, right? And that's what you want. That'll get a little bit of your life back now that you're sitting there pulling your hair out because we all do that.
I love it. I love it. And I'm going to have to steal some of these acronyms from you, by the way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, check out my wife, Patty Beach's book, The Art of Alignment.
That's going to go in the show notes. Drop it in. That's fine. Patty, I'm going to have to get in the show now as well. There we go.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
Okay, gents, I'm going to give the mic to you. One question for me. What's the burning question? Maybe Mitch, take it away.
Okay. Roger already gave it.
Go ahead. Go, Mitch. Yeah, we did it on the side.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Is DeFi ever really going to happen?
Is DeFi ever really going to happen? Well, it's happening. I think that's what's happening right now. It's in the creator mode. We're talking about entrepreneurs are creators. Everything has to start. There's going to be sort of change in the midst of it, and there's going to be a stop, i.e. when people accept it, right? When the public accepts it. And I think right now we're at the start of the process. We're at the start of that life cycle, and there is a lot of activity, a lot of different ideas coming out. And is it going to happen? Yeah. I'm an eternal optimist. I think it has to happen because it starts creating, we're talking about accessibility for entrepreneurs to find different ways to scale up their company. You know, DeFi gives a wider range of public access to different types of financial services. So it's got to happen. We want an inclusive financial ecosystem, not an exclusive financial ecosystem, right? So as many people as we can help and I can help, you know, get towards that, let's do it. Let's do it together. And I think we do it as an ecosystem, and as a community.
Love it.
As
a single entity. Love that. I love your comment there, because one of the things I say to people a lot of times, you know, people will complain about DeFi or crypto or things like that. Oh, look at all these things that are happening that are negative. It's like, well, yeah, you know, technology can't make humans more virtuous. Only humans can choose to use technology in a virtuous fashion. And that's what, yes, every technology gets used for both good and evil. And it's up to us as human beings to build the ecosystems, to build the trust, to include others in a way that everyone benefits, as opposed to just, you know, the selfish benefit of the few. And so I'm 100% aligned with you on that. And that's one of the things that we're in this to do. You know, our purpose is to find and support technologists that are putting technology in service of a better humanity for all.
100%. And I love it, guys. I really enjoyed today's show. And I always ask the guests at the back end of the show, how can people out there get in touch with you guys and engage with not you, people in your business?
Yeah, absolutely. You can reach out to us through LinkedIn directly, Mitch Posada or Roger Tonis. And you'll see there our page for Founder Advisors and also founderadvisors.tech, T-E-C-H. We're focused mainly on tech founders. And like you said at the top, we're flexible into these different industries, but we're very excited and interested about the fintech industry. And that's why we asked the DeFi question of you. But yeah, awesome. That's how you can reach us.
Okay, great, guys. And listen, looking forward to seeing your continued growth. And to everyone out there, you know, I believe that a hidden secret to growth is being able to tap into an ecosystem of advisors, consultants, and a public that is inclusive and accessible and allows you to get the know-how and allows you to get the growth that you want to aspire to. So looking forward to catching up with you all next week. And this is Richard Doherty signing off.
Thank you for listening to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. Please take advantage of the free gift Richard has waiting for you. It's his new ebook, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.